everyone, and welcome to another episode of Sols in the City. Today, I am with my friend and public health expert, Rihanna Russo.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. Okay, why don't you start off just by introducing yourself? Where are you from? How old are you? Where'd you go to school?
So, I am from Long Island. I grew up on the East End in Southampton, and I went to school at Hopkins with you. I graduated in 2017 as a public health and cognitive science major, and then went on to do my master's in infectious disease epidemiology, also at Hopkins. So I was in Baltimore for 5 years, which was an interesting time in my life.
Definitely. So what does a public, for those who don't know much about public health, I mean, we were very much exposed to it because Hopkins is known for that discipline. What does a public health major entail?
So public health is really just looking at the health of a population, and it entails everything from policy to medicine. So it's really a wide span of everything of daily life. Something that I found interesting being a public health major at Hopkins is that you could really take any class and relate it back to public health. You know, I took some poli-sci classes, and that relates to public health because, you know, in the context of what's happening right now, the political climate can really affect health. You know, we talk about Medicare for all, and we talk about these different policies that allow people to go get tested for COVID. And in order to have a good health of a population, you need to consider all aspects, and policy is definitely one of them.
And what attracted you to the major? Like, why did you want to study it?
So it's actually funny because I came into Hopkins as a bio major.
Interesting.
Then moved from bio to neuroscience, from neuroscience to cognitive science, then found public health during my sophomore year at Hopkins. And I felt like public health kind of encapsulated a lot of what I wanted in a major. I was interested in science, but I was also interested in people, and not just the hard science, like bench science, you know, being in a lab, doing chemistry experiments. Like, I never wanted to do that. But I was always interested in, like, bio, health, that type of stuff. So, you know, Hopkins is the leader in public health, and I think that I just kind of got exposed to it enough to realize, oh, this is kind of what I really want to do. Took an intro class, and then it was kind of from there, yeah, just all happened.
Awesome. And what does cognitive, like, how is cognitive science different than neuroscience, different than psychology? Yeah. I didn't even have this as a note. Yeah. I'm just curious.
That's a good question. So cognitive science is kind of a mixture of neuroscience and psychology, if you want to, yeah, you can describe it as that. But essentially, it's looking at how you think, not exactly like the neural mechanisms of your actual brain, but you're looking at kind of how that contributes to the way you perceive things, or a lot of it, you know, you can talk about like disorders that people have, like with like vision disorders, auditory disorders, and you're looking at how the brain processes things and how it's different than how other people processes things and how we all interpret the world differently. So it's more about thinking and perception than it is about like the actual neurological part.
And then how is it different than psychology?
So it's different than psychology because it's not, it still relates to like the neurological aspects. It's not like bipolar disorder, depression, those things, those are all more psychological. Whereas cognition, it's like more of like visual issues. Like if you're like colorblindness, there's a part of the brain that's damaged and that causes colorblindness. So it's more about like perceiving things as opposed to like, I guess, like the feelings of psychology, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think I know what you mean. Like endorphins and like lack of.
Yeah.
Which would lead to like depression or anxiety and things like that.
Yeah. Cool. Exactly.
So in addition to being my friend, I obviously have you on here because of what's going on in the world. So I was wondering if, in your words, you could explain what's going on with coronavirus.
So I feel like it's hard to sum it up.
Yeah. Not exactly. It doesn't have to be one sentence.
I mean, recently the WHO declared that coronavirus was a pandemic. And I think that a lot of people started freaking out after that happened. But I don't necessarily think that anyone needs to freak out more than they were freaking out before they declared it a pandemic, because it was a pandemic, you know, before they said it, it already was one.
I think they were saying that on the daily.
Yeah, the daily, they summarized that very well. And they're saying, like, it's like a weatherman saying it's raining after you're standing outside in a downpour. Mm-hmm. And the WHO has different classifications for health emergencies, and their highest classification is public health emergency of international concern. And that has only been declared in recent years. I think it was swine flu, Ebola, Zika, and then now this coronavirus. And that is really more telling of the level of concern we need than calling it a pandemic.
Okay. What's the difference between an epidemic and a pandemic?
Yeah, I was just going to say that because I think some people get confused. So an epidemic just refers to an outbreak of a disease in an area. So you could call an outbreak of the measles in New York City back in September. That was an epidemic of measles. A pandemic refers to an outbreak that spans multiple countries, multiple locations. So I want to say that it's four countries. That's the threshold that you have to meet in order to be qualified or classified as a pandemic.
Oh, so yeah. So essentially it has been a pandemic since January because you can name four countries back then.
Exactly. Exactly.
And how did we get here? I think like a lot of the confusion is, it seems like we're recording this, the 15th of March?
Yeah.
And it feels like in the past week, it's gone from 0 to 100, but I think that's mostly because we're in the United States. Like, why has it escalated so quickly so recently?
So I wouldn't say that it's escalated so quickly so recently. I think that it's been here for a while.
Yeah.
And we unfortunately have had a lack of testing, a lack of widespread testing, a lack of accessible, affordable testing. And I think that's contributed to the lack of cases that we've seen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in the past few weeks, as you said, New York City has gone from no cases to, I think that there's definitely over 100 cases in New York City, over, I think, 300 in New York State. You know, we see this exponential increase. It's not because more people are, quote, getting the disease. It's just that we're finding the disease more. And that's something really common in public health, in epidemiology. When you look for something, you find it.
Yeah.
So we weren't looking for it before. Now we are. So that's why we're seeing so many cases. But I don't think that means that we need to worry more than we were worrying before. We're just, you know, we're just testing now. So we're just seeing what's actually there. We're not, you know, it's not that everyone is like suddenly getting infected, you know?
And I think we're finally responding now more so in a line with how China initially responded, as opposed to getting to the point of like where Italy is.
Yes. Yeah. And I think when you look at the different countries' responses and how the U.S. has responded compared to the different countries, you know, we started out by having our president comparing it to the flu and saying that, oh, it's just a bad case of the flu. You know, it's not. I just want to also say that, like, it is not the flu virus. Influenza and coronavirus are two different viruses. They're not the same. The coronavirus leads to respiratory disease. The flu, very infrequently, if ever, leads to respiratory disease, meaning an inflammation of the lungs and causing coughing, that sort of thing, causing pneumonia. And having an administration that is just calling it a bad case of the flu season is spreading misinformation and causing people to not realize the extent to which we need to prevent things. But I think now we are taking an approach that is more similar to China, to Korea, where we are really trying to quarantine people. We're trying to, you know, mitigate the spread of it. I think we're past the point where we can contain it. Unfortunately, we just, you know, we can't stop it from spreading, but we can do all that we can to try and lessen the effects of the spread.
Definitely. So I think one thing I think that's really interesting is just how you said, you know, misinformation's being spread and things like that. And that all links back ultimately, or a lot of it links back to technology and the technology we have now, which allows like fake news to spread. But also, you know, when you're getting an email from every single corporation you've ever visited saying like, what's happening
this
with
our response.
This is our response and it's all the same friggin' thing. It also, I think, increases anxiety. So I wanted to touch on both, and especially that you also studied CogSci. Like, is it common for pandemics to result in this overall fear in society?
Definitely. Definitely. I think anytime there's an outbreak, anytime there's something that affects so many people, it's going to cause panic. It's going to cause anxiety. And I don't, it's not unique to this situation. And obviously we weren't alive 100 years ago when the Spanish flu outbreak happened. But I'm sure that there was a lot of panic and anxiety that happened back then. And of course we are a lot more connected now. And as you said, there's a lot more technology. And so there can be spread of fake news, misinformation. So that might heighten things. But I do think that, you know, historically in the past, every time there was an outbreak like this, there was kind of mass hysteria and anxiety. And I think another thing, I don't know if I'm like answering questions you don't have or are going to ask, but just about like the whole racism aspect of it, that has been really challenging for the Asian community, the Chinese community. You know, yes, this virus did kind of originate in China, but that doesn't mean that it's the Chinese fault that it happened there.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean that they manufactured it. That is a crazy thing. Like, most of the diseases come from animal reservoirs. That's where this came from. It came from a bat. It didn't come from a lab. Don't believe that, you know?
Yeah.
But it has caused people to be racist against Chinese people, against Chinese Americans. You know, there's been loss of business in Chinatown because of it. People don't want to go there. And so this has happened in the past. Actually, there was a outbreak of cholera, I want to say, in like the 1800s, something like that.
I remember studying that in my intro to
public
health class.
So cholera was a huge problem. And there was this thing called yellow cholera, which was a name that people gave to cholera from that they quote thought came from Asian people, which just, it was just cholera, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But for some reason, specifically with Asian people, there's this, you know, sense of otherness that people want to, you know, inherently distance themselves from. And so it's happened in the past, it's happening now, it's going to happen in the future. But I think it's really important to keep that in mind and try and learn from the past. You know, we haven't been great at doing that, but I think that now is a pivotal moment where we can really try and be better than we were in the past.
Definitely. I wanted to clear up some other misconceptions that are being spread and things like that. I'm taking a lot from the Daily most likely, but I just, I think it's best to have you explain them so that people can get it all in once kind of. So what is social distancing?
Social distancing means trying to limit the amount of time that you spend with other people and also the space between people. I'm laughing because Zoe and I are sitting like very close to each other on her couch right now. But essentially, social distancing, you want to make your network small. You know, a lot of us have bigger networks. You know, we go to work, we go hang out with friends, we go see family. But the whole concept of social distancing is making your network as small as it can be without compromising your ability to kind of live your life. Mm-hmm. So that refers to limiting working in an office. A lot of companies have instituted work remotely policies, and that kind of gets at that social distancing. You're trying to limit the number of people who are in an enclosed space at the same time, mm-hmm. so that you can reduce the number of susceptible people who can then be infected, essentially.
Yeah, it's it's interesting because before I listened to that episode of The Daily, I thought it was just a, like a phrase. Like, I didn't think it was actually like a public health cons term.
Yeah.
Which
yeah.
is so funny. Not funny, but.
Yeah. My professor at Hopkins during my master's, I'm trying to find what she said about it, but I really feel like I should just post exactly what she said because she shared so much about it. But she's talking about being hyper local. So limiting your network of people to then limit the exposure to the virus. And something that she was referring to was like the closed network strategy, which is in public health trying to just like close off your contact with other people. And it's the same thing as social distancing. Mm-hmm. You're trying to like get that network to as small as it can be without being by yourself, because you shouldn't be by yourself, you know?
Yeah.
And that's another thing. Like, isolation isn't what you should do if you can, you know, at least interact with some people. That's also not good for your mental health to just quarantine yourself away and be by yourself, but just limiting your interactions with others.
Definitely. So should people, let's say I had a flight to, or let's say I had a flight next week. Should I go on the flight?
Well, it depends on where the flight is going.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I hate that answer, but in epidemiology, they make a joke of it. They're like, the answer is always it depends.
Yeah.
Because it very often is. If you're going to California, no. If you're going to Italy, no. Don't get on those flights.
Yeah.
You know, if you're flying home, I mean, I know you live in New Jersey, so yeah. You wouldn't do that. But, you know, if you live in like Minnesota and you were to be flying home, maybe, you know, my older sister is currently in Aruba and she was calling me every day up until the trip. She's still calling me every day on her trip. She's like, I don't know what to do. Like, should I fly back now? I don't know. I think flying is not the best idea right now. I think if you have to do it, you do it. You wear gloves. You take Clorox wipes with you. You know, you try and wipe down everything that you're going to be touching, like on the plane and whatnot. But I think not traveling is probably the best idea for now.
What about public transportation?
So that's hard because, you know, some people have to use public transportation. But I would say if you have the ability to walk or bike somewhere, do that. You know, after that, I would say taking a car would be then the next option. And then after that, public transportation. I mean, some people, again, can't get away with walking or biking to work. And some people can't afford to pay for a car. So if you do have to take public transportation, something annoying that everyone is saying is if you see a crowded bus or car, like train car, wait for the next one. And yeah, maybe that'll make you wait late for work. But I think that that's actually a really good idea to do because mm-hmm. you don't want to be packed in a train with a bunch of other people. You literally cannot practice social distancing by getting on a packed train car. And I mean, I think a lot of people are just not using public transportation anymore, so it's easier for those who really really have to because mm-hmm. there are fewer people on it.
Yeah.
But I would say try and limit the amount that you use public transit.
One thing I thought was interesting was whoever the guy was on The Daily was saying, like, if you do, you stand up, you try not to touch anything. If you do, you put a glove on, hold it, and then, you know, disinfect after.
Yeah,
just like limit contact with anything that's
exactly
contaminated. And let's see, one thing I I've struggled with, or not struggled with, but have been trying to assess, is how I can take this seriously enough and be the appropriate amount of worried without being super overreactive and just increasing the anxiety that I already have. So I guess, how would you advise people to take this seriously without going to full panic mode?
That's a great question. And I will preface my answer by saying that I don't think I have all the answers. And this isn't the only answer. But I do think that we all need to be concerned. And as young people, you know, we are not at the greatest risk, but that doesn't mean that we shouldn't take this seriously because we can be infected and not know it, and we can spread the virus and not know it. So we do need to take it seriously. We want to make sure that we keep vulnerable populations safe, you know, older adults, people who are immunocompromised. So we have to do everything that we can to kind of protect ourselves and others. And I think that means limiting going out, limiting, you know, don't go to a crowded bar on a Friday night. Don't go to a workout class that you would normally go to. Something that I have been telling my roommates and doing myself is like limiting the workout classes and stuff that I usually do, because I just don't think that it's the smartest thing to do right now.
Mm-hmm.
And on the other hand, I don't think that you need to kind of stop your life altogether. I think that that causes more panic than anything else. If you kind of decide, okay, I'm going to just sit at home, I'm going to not do anything, I'm not going to go and see anyone, you know, mm-hmm. I think it just gets back to like limiting your circle and doing what you can do to kind of prevent a lot of exposure to other people, but not so much that you feel like you can't live your life.
Yeah.
And I think like getting at the part of your question about like how not to panic, I think like all this panic buying is really just like fueling anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that there's no need to go to the store and buy like 10 boxes of pasta and, you know, 15 bags of frozen vegetables if that's not what you normally do. Of course, you can pick up a few extra things, but I think that everyone seeing all of these empty shelves is just heightening everyone's fears.
Yeah.
And they're, you know, that's, I see photos on the internet all of the time on Instagram of empty Trader Joe's shelves, empty Whole Foods, and that's horrible to look at, you know.
Mm-hmm. It just is like a net, like a vicious cycle or like snowball effect.
Yeah, exactly. And one person doing that, like, you know, the people who are panic buying then cause other people to panic buy because they're worried that they're not going to be able to just buy their regular groceries for the week. And so I think that what we can do is, you know, try and limit our exposure to other people and really just buy what's necessary for right now. Pick up a few extra things if you are worried that you do need to self-quarantine. If you think you've been exposed, then yeah, you should stay home for at least 14 days. So you might need some extra food, but you don't need 10 boxes of pasta for 14 days. I'm sorry.
Yeah, that is, it's just like those memes of like, if you need to buy 40 rolls of toilet paper, like you've had an issue before the coronavirus.
Yeah, exactly. There's just no need to have that amount of food for 14 days. And that's really what the, you know, self-quarantine time period is advised. So anything more than, you know, a couple of box of pasta, maybe some frozen meals, like you don't need that.
Yeah,
can relax.
I think one thing which we talked about before we started recording, which was interesting, and it almost is like in parallel with other themes of my podcast, was how you said everyone right now is like in such a state of confusion and freaking out and saying like, you know, my life is so different. But the irony is that everyone is feeling that.
Yeah.
And it's, I mean, in some ways, as you said, it's kind of, it's a way to comfort ourselves. It's kind of like how, you know, the reason I started this podcast was this unique loneliness that everyone was shared, like had shared.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's, even though it's, I mean, it's a weird thing to be like, everyone's confused right now, but it is like, okay, we're all feeling like this.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know, but I guess how do you balance being scared and also just like living your life normally, knowing there's such a big elephant in the room?
Yeah, it's hard. I don't know. I'm trying to figure that out too. You know, I am trying to change my daily activities so that I'm not, you know, going out and being in huge crowds and whatnot, but also sticking to some things that make me feel good and safe and like happy. But I don't know. I mean, balancing the two is just really difficult. And I think it's kind of on an individual basis. Like what mm-hmm. works for me might not work for you, might not work for, you know, other people. And so it's kind of like checking in with yourself and kind of like feeling out what will work, what doesn't. And unfortunately, I think that this is going to be our lives for at least the next few months. I don't think it's going to resolve itself in 2 weeks. And so I think that there will be a lot of trial and error in figuring out like how to balance the world we live in right now. But I don't think that anyone should be discouraged if they're feeling anxious, if they're feeling scared. We're all feeling anxious and scared. And it's just kind of figuring out like the little things that we can do to make ourselves feel better.
Yeah. I think some, like, I guess not necessarily resources, but things that I've found out, which I think would be good to share, for example, are like different studios are offering free online workout classes. Yes. Like, yeah. The class, some yoga thing that I forget what it's
called. Yoga Works.
Yoga Works too.
Yeah, Yoga Works is, I know.
There's YouTube videos and like, yeah, just recommending good books and mm-hmm. good TV shows. I just started Schitt's Creek.
Great show. Yeah. Amy Schumer just posted a list of shows that she recommends on her Instagram page. And I think that's part of it too. It's like, let's all just recommend like, let's try and help each other out. Like, I was talking to my mom yesterday about this, and you know, even we were kind of speaking about it before, but it weirdly causes a sense of community. Like, we're all scared,
yeah,
but like, we're kind of coming together now in a way that we don't usually come together.
Exactly.
And I think helping each other out, you know, even like little things like recommending books or recommending TV shows, or if you live in an apartment building where you know there are a lot of older people, offering to pick up food for them, offering to do like little tasks. I think that that can make you feel really good, you know, and that can help.
Yeah.
So it's just, yeah, those types of things.
And like, luckily we live in a time, I mean, for better or for worse, with such heightened technology that like we can FaceTime people.
Yeah.
And so you can still, you know, social distance yourself, but also having a virtual community and,
yeah,
talking with your friends and, you know, reaching out to that person that you haven't, that you've been meaning to reach out to, like, out to, but haven't because you've been so swamped with work or something, yeah, like that.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, so on a completely different note, I always end by asking these 5 questions that are more related to, like, mental health and stuff and just whatever. We'll end on a happy note, I guess. Okay, so the first question. What's one thing in your life that's happened to you that's made you a stronger person today? Ooh. We're going real deep.
Wow. That's a good question. I mean, I think something recently that I'll speak about is my current job. I got my job very quickly. My boss was kind of hiring because she needed to fill the position. And she went out on maternity leave a month after I started working, and I am a one person team. So I started this job and really had no idea what I was doing and worked by myself for 7 months. Wow. And it was hard. I was working in an office where there were people who were working on teams and I was by myself, and I'm a project coordinator and data analyst. So my job is literally sitting at a computer all day. And it was very isolating, and I felt, you know, kind of out of sorts. I was living at the time in an apartment with 2 people who I didn't know. I had a job where I felt like I was completely by myself. And I was able to just kind of push through it because I kind of knew that in the end, it would be a good opportunity for me. And I knew that once my boss came back, she would be a great mentor. And I'm just really proud of myself for having pushed through it because I love my job now, like, love my boss, like, have a great coworker now who I'm really close with. But, you know, before that, I kind of like, I would call my mom and I would be like, I don't know if I can do this. Like, I think I need to quit. And she was like, just keep doing, you know, like, mm-hmm. take it one day at a time. That's like a recent thing that I'm really proud of, being able to have stuck with that job and now see kind of like
how much you've grown.
Yeah, exactly.
Awesome. Do you believe everything happens for a reason? Mm-hmm. This takes a whole different meaning now with this pandemic.
Do I believe that? Yeah, I think I do. I think everything happens for a reason. I think that, you know, things get thrown at you, and at the time you're like, why did this happen? And then later on you look back and you're like, you know what, I'm kind of grateful for that. Like, even as I just described with my job, like, that really sucked, but I was able to, like, learn a lot about myself. And mm-hmm. I think that everything does happen for a reason in a way, even if you don't see it at that time. You can look back and think, like, oh, yeah, okay, I get that now.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Like, I grieve from it. If a crystal ball could tell you anything about yourself, your life, the future, or anything else, what would you most want to know?
Ooh. What would I want to know? That's a good question, too. You're really making me think right now. I don't know. I weirdly want to say, like, I would want to know that, like, in the future, like, my family and I am, like, happy and safe and whatnot. Especially, like, right now. I feel like this is such a time question. Yeah,
like, the cure to coronavirus.
I was telling Zoe earlier that I feel like my anxiety about COVID is more about, like, my family. Like, my parents are older, and so I'm more worried about them than I am about really myself. So I think, like, knowing that, like, they are going to be okay, and really everyone that I care and love about is going to be okay.
Agreed. Do you have a favorite quote or a mantra that you live by?
Yeah, wait. It's, like, I don't know. There's, like, variations of it, but it's, like, something like breathing in, like, I'm loved, breathing out, I'm okay. Something like that. Yeah,
okay. I remember that.
Sorry, I'll look that it just, like, took me a really long time to just say that. But, yeah, like, little – I think – I really like, little things like that, especially, like, getting you centered on taking deep breaths. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I literally realize that I'm not breathing.
Like, yeah, I realized that the other day. I was, like, I haven't taken a breath in, like – way too long.
Yeah,
or like a real breath.
Yeah, so like things that remind me of breathing, like mantras that are like inhale and then exhale, like all of like the, you know, expectations and mm-hmm. things that you're holding on to. That's what I like.
Same. What do you love most about yourself?
Oh. I love that this is always what I think of when they're like, choose a word that like you think that describes you. I think that I persevere through a lot. I think that like that's what I love about me. I think that I sometimes put it on myself. Like I like to make things challenging for myself, unfortunately, but I like overcoming things, and I think that I do that well. And I'm proud of myself for being able to do that.
Definitely. It makes you, it's like you're a really strong person.
Yeah. Like I like to, yeah. Well, I like to think that I am.
Definitely. And last but not least, how do you find solace in the city?
Mm-hmm. I do a lot of yoga. Like yeah. A lot of yoga.
Me too. And I've gotten into just like doing YouTube videos.
Yeah. It's funny because I used to like kind of make fun of it and like did not really take it seriously at all, but I think like moving to the city and being here has brought a lot of challenges that I didn't expect, and I think that like having a space where you can let all of that go and focus on breathing is really helpful. I also meditate. I use like this app called Insight Timer, which I don't know if you've heard of it.
I have Headspace, but I haven't really used it.
Yeah, it's Insight Timer is free, which is what I like about it.
That's good.
My mom actually told me about it. She's super into meditation, and she's like done like meditation retreats with Deepak Chopra.
Oh wow.
Yeah, she's like very into it. But so she's like introduced me more to meditation and stuff. So I think like yoga and meditation, as cliche as that is, I am
so necessary.
That type of person.
Well, thank you so much for coming and speaking and just educating me and everyone. Where can everyone follow you or like study things that you think are important?
Yeah. I mean, if you want to follow my Insta, it's Ree Russo. But in all seriousness, like to find out updated information about things, go to like the CDC, go to the WHO if you want to follow information about COVID. Actually, I want to really quickly say a lot of people have been trying to steal information by creating fake maps of the outbreak. So I'm sure you've seen the Hopkins map where it shows all of the different locations mm-hmm. and like the tracks the cases and recovered and all that. People have been creating fake websites Jeez. That look like that Hopkins map, but they actually are like stealing your information when you access the site. So it's really scary. And like, I hate that that's happening because there's always going to be someone who's going to exploit a time of fear and crisis yeah. to, you know, for their own gain. But really just like go to government websites, like
yeah.
make sure that you're looking at a website that is like a valid website. Don't just like randomly Google things. Unfortunately, we just like can't do that right now.
Yeah, I actually made that mistake this morning. I reposted this thing from some not senator, a like member of the House of something. Mm-hmm. And my dad texts me and is like, you realize that that person has been like convicted of all these things and just like it's a terrible like thing to be sharing as like your public image. So I immediately was like, delete it. But just really educating yourself and like the right by reading enough, but not too much that you're just going to increase anxiety.
Yeah. Also like the daily podcast. I like love that. It. I think they've been doing a really great job of covering what's going on.
Definitely. Well, thanks again. Thank Bye everyone. You. Stay safe. Stay healthy. Stay clean. Wow, what a year this week has been. This is my second solo, but it feels like it's completely different than the first one because so much has changed this week. I can't even wrap my mind around it. I think that's a common feeling felt among most people, you know, listening to this podcast and just in the world in general. It's like a very scary apocalyptic time, and I just don't know what to feel. It's almost ironic that I started this podcast because I was so feeling so lonely despite not being alone. And now it's like, I'm lonely. I'm alone. I'm confused. All I'm doing is just eating and attempting to read and napping and waking up at 3 a.m. Like, I don't know what day it is. It's really crazy. I think one thing I've realized about myself in this past 3 days that's felt like eternity is that I guess it like made me realize more what my specific anxiety was, which is just interesting. If you guys listened to my episode with Dylan a couple months ago, he talked about how his anxiety was like, he doesn't get anxious about things like when, you know, there was a lot of things going on in Iran. He doesn't get like anxious about those things. And I kind of agree. It's weird how this, despite getting anxious about like the smallest things, I'm weirdly calm during all of this. And I think that maybe it makes me like a selfish person, but I'm not freaking out about this. I feel like I can read the news without having my heart level go up, which is both good and bad, I guess. But one thing, if you are like that and, you know, you're not triggered by seeing all of these crazy things, I would highly recommend watching the Netflix documentary series Explained. They have one called The Next Pandemic. And I need to find out when this was friggin' made because it is so eerie. It basically just explains, like, what a pandemic is and like why it would start. I personally actually found it definitely don't watch it if you are freaked out by what's going on in the world, because it's really creepy how it so foreshadows exactly what's going on right now. But at the end, I actually find it kind of comforting. They talk a lot about SARS, which was a similar respiratory virus or I don't know if that's the right word of saying it, but it's like something that was around in 2003. So I was definitely too young to remember it, but just watching it unfold, it's same thing. It originated in bats. it spread really quickly. People didn't know like what to do. And just when I was like, even though it was a pretty intense 30-minute documentary series episode, at the end, it did make you realize that this is going to pass. Like, it'll take a while, and it's going to be a really, really weird couple of months, but we'll get through it. And I think by like June, July, things may not be completely back to normal, but it won't be as scary. So again, only watch that if this is something that's interests you and doesn't scare you. And in the meantime, if you're bored, shoot me a text or a DM, because I am just losing my mind in New York. So I would love to go on a walk with someone and stand 5 feet apart while still social distancing. But yeah, I'm here if anyone needs to talk or wants to vent. Yeah, so see you guys. Stay safe. Stay healthy. Wash your hands. Bye.